Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's DAKA teleconference. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded, and I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Ms. Mary-Elena Hincapié, the Executive Director of the National Immigration Law Center. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, David. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this important discussion. My name is Mary-Elena Hincapié. I'm the Executive Director of the National Immigration Law Center. On this call today, we have community leaders, congressional leaders, academic leaders, and most importantly, members of our community who are directly impacted by the administration's cruel decision and political decision to terminate the DACA program. We're here today to talk about one of the aspects of the DACA experience that's often overlooked. Most often we hear in the press policymakers talking about students and college students and valedictorians, but the fact is that DACA recipients are as diverse as our communities. DACA recipients are, yes, they are college students, they're also workers, they're also parents, most importantly, which is who we will be focusing on today, and their parents of U.S. citizen children. And these children, like all children, rely on their parents and their families to provide economic and emotional support for them and stability. Just over a month ago, DACA recipients across the country were rattled by the news that the Trump administration had decided to take away this lifeline from almost 800,000 young people. They not only are concerned about themselves, but about their families. And the DACA recipients that are also parents have the anxiety on top of that to worry about what will happen to their children, what will happen to their siblings, what will happen to their parents as well. Oftentimes, the family members are the ones who are the less visible, although they are equally hurt by this decision of the Trump administration. More than one out of every four DACA recipients is a parent, and according to a recent survey conducted by UC San Diego Professor Tom Wong, with the help of the National Immigration Law Center, United We Dream Network, and the Center for American Progress, we worked on this report together, and what we found was that hundreds of children who should be entitled to the same rights and opportunities as any other children are now being impacted by the actions of Congress. We are calling on Congress to act now. Every single day that passes without the DREAM Act is a day that parents, DACA recipients who are parents, as well as every other DACA recipient, their lives and their children's lives are at risk. We saw this most directly just shortly before President Trump terminated the program back in August when Rixi Enriquez Perdomo, a young DACA recipient out of Kentucky who is the mother of U.S. citizen children, was detained despite having DACA. She was wrongfully detained and put in jail for about a week until we at the National Immigration Law Center were able to work with local organizers and advocates and lawyers in Kentucky and in Ohio to get her released. That should not happen to any single person, any single parent. That is the nightmare that many parents are concerned about. And in fact, it's the nightmare that affects our children who are going to school every day wondering if their parent will be there at the end of the day, and the psychological and emotional trauma that this is having on our children is grave and should be of concern to all policymakers, regardless of what their political ideology or what party they belong to. Young people like Marta, who is a DACA recipient who is on our call today, will speak shortly, have already taken a stand. They've come forward. They've provided their information voluntarily to the federal government and have built a life for themselves here. This is their country. They are our family members. They are our neighbors. They're our community members, our students, our staff. It's time for the federal government to invest in them and to make the courageous decision of passing the DREAM Act without any further delay. We need a clean DREAM Act, a bipartisan DREAM Act, by the end of this year at the very latest. So with that, I'll turn over to our first speaker, who is Marta Ruiz, a Colorado parent and DACA recipient, who will discuss how DACA has changed her family's life and what this means for her and her children. Marta?
Thank you, Maria Elena.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you all for joining us. I am a dreamer, and this is my story. I don't know if any of you can remember what you were doing. Friday, June 12th, 2012. I apologize. This always gets to me. But Friday, June 12th, 2012, this day changed my life. DACA was announced. I spent the next couple of months anxiously waiting for the application process to open and getting all the information I could. At this time, we had three wonderful children, and we realized that our kids had been shielded from the complete truth of our immigration status. You know, this isn't something you tell your kids. You don't talk about immigration. It's not a conversation you have at the dinner table. But it was about to get very real for me, and I was about to get very busy, not just my personal life, our family life, but also in our community. I was going to get more involved and start helping more. So before that, when we've had our first child, when she first started preschool, I always said I was a parent coordinator for the preschool. And I always said, as soon as she gets into elementary, I am going to be the PTA president. That was my goal, is to be involved in their school, their life, as much as I could. And the following year, I did. I was the PTA president for my daughter's school. As a family, we were very active, and not just in our community, but in our children's school, in their lives. But after DACA was announced, I had a lot of doors slammed in my face. Sorry. And now they were all
Take
open.
Your time.
They were all open for me. But I knew that now, after DACA, I'm sorry. My life is going to change for the best, and not just mine, our family completely. We had a family meeting, and I had to explain to my 10-year-old and my 8-year-old immigration and an emergency plan. I told them, we're going to have an emergency meeting. And they thought, oh, it's about the fire evacuation, where to go. And I was like, no, it's about what you need to do in case we are taken away from you. And immediately, you know, they started asking questions. But why? What can we do? How can we help you? It's not fair. Who do we need to talk to? As a child, you know, you're not supposed to worry about immigration. You're supposed to worry about, you know, what's for snack? What game are you going to play? You know, where's your last toy? But not immigration. That shouldn't be in the child's mind at all. After all the crying and the worrying from them, we explained to them that these changes were going to be good, and I was actually going to go back to school. We didn't know how we were going to do it, but I enrolled in the university, and my dreams of going back, you know, came true for me. I know I couldn't go full-time since we have to pay for all of it, but I slowly and steadily took a couple classes a semester. I had 3 jobs, 3 kids, a household to run, but it was what we needed to do to pay for my tuition. And my husband would stay up with me till 3 a.m. doing algebra. We would all sit at the table and do our homework together. It was something we'd do together, and till now, I still am doing homework, and I'm still taking classes. You know, I finally had a driver's license. I was no longer worried about driving around. We have a busy everyday life. Dance lessons, peewee baseball, everything. I was always nervous behind the wheel, and now I'm not. It's been lifted. That anxiety has been lifted. DACA has given our family some of our dreams back. I have a good job. I still go part-time to school. I'm what you call a career student since I'm going to be there for quite a while. But at least I can say I'm a student. DACA hasn't only given me hope, but it has given my entire family hope. Before me, no one in my immediate family had ever even imagined of going back to college. Now my sisters and my brothers talk about it, my nephews, my nieces. Before it wasn't a conversation, now it is. Last year, my mom proudly would say, I have 5 of my 7 kids in college. One of them is still in high school, but he's going there too. We're better role models, and we're signs of hope for our siblings and our kids. So imagine our concern and anxiety when we were told it would be canceled. We had another family meeting, and this time with more specifics and another run-through of your Know Your Rights training. You kids should not have to go through Know Your Rights training. You know, the hardest day for me was preparing in case we were separating, signing a power of attorney for all 3 of my kids. I was crying the entire time, and I pray that I never see those papers. Again, they're locked up, and I don't want to see them. My kids had dreams of being veterinarians, artists, teachers, and now they want to become lawyers to help families like ours. My 11-year-old wants to be a judge. DACA has been a blessing in disguise. It has brought us happiness and sorrow. It has been a lifeline, a door opener, but it's not a permanent fix. I turned a year old when I came to the United States. I know no other home. This is my kid's home. This is our family home. And we need a clean Dream Act, and we need it quickly, because this is one of thousands of stories. My family is one of thousands of families. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Marta. Thank you for being so courageous and sharing your family's powerful story, for sharing your story with the country. Next, we'll hear from Isela Blanc, who's a state representative from Arizona, who will share her story and what she sees happening in Arizona as well. Representative Blanc?
Hi, thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity to allow me to at least provide some perspective. So to describe what this means to me is really personal. I came to the United States when I was 6.5 years of age. So imagine my mom and my dad leaving everything behind in Guadalajara, Mexico. I can describe every detail leading up to our departure, coming to the United States, and how drastically my life changed the moment we set foot in Oregon. Why that's important is because in Mexico, my father had a job, we had a home, but my parents felt it really important to pursue something better and grander for their kids, something that meant higher education, because you have to understand my dad only made it to 2nd grade and my mom only made it to 5th grade, and they knew that education was the best opportunity for their daughters at the time, and so we left everything behind. And as I was approaching the age of 7 is when our visa expired, and therefore my family and I became undocumented. As a 7-year-old, I really had little understanding of what it meant. But what I did understand is who immigration was and what to look for. However, I only felt fear when I saw the green vans, which was not very often. And I think that's important because I was able to grow up in an environment that at least to some degree felt incredibly safe. I was incredibly lucky. We have to remind ourselves that in a televised debate between Ronald Reagan and Democratic presidential nominee Walter Mondale, Ronald Reagan made it very clear. He stated, "I believe in the idea of amnesty for those who have put down roots and lived here, even though sometime back they may have entered illegally." And there's this really great belief that President Ronald Reagan, in his bones, believed in the part of his understanding of what America is, a country fundamentally open to those who wanted to join us. And that is what I recall in my childhood, is this understanding of this fundamental belief in a nation of immigrants. And why that's important is because 30 years after Reagan's 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act, 30 years in 2016, almost to the date, November of 2016, I was elected along with Representative Cesar Chavez in the state of Arizona, along with Representative Teresa Alonso Leon of Oregon, Assemblywoman Blanca Rubio of California, as well as Congressman Ruben Cuhan and Adriano Espelat. Think about that. 30 years after the Immigration Reform and Control Act, we're talking about people who at some point identified as undocumented, and we were given the opportunity to join a country that I have only known to be my home, a country that I love and do, in fact, respect, and now I have the opportunity to serve in a state that has been known for anti-immigration laws like SB 1070, Your Papers, Please, the anti-Mexican-American studies, the ban on it. And so for me, every day I get to share my story, but more importantly, along with the many people who were undocumented and were given a pathway to citizenship because of an ideology that the basic fundamental understanding of America is a place for immigrants where we can make it a great nation. And so I want to remind, how far we've come, but how far back. I mean, all the steps that we're taking back in terms of discussing, we're talking about 800,000 DACA recipients, but the reality is that we have close to 11 million dreamers.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we really need to just sit down and think. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Blanc, and really appreciate you sharing your own story and your journey. And thank you especially for giving back to our community as a state legislator now. Our next speaker is Representative Pramila Jayapal, who represents the state of Washington, who is joining us today. It's a wonderful honor to have her on our call as a longtime civil and human rights activist who we at the National Immigration Law Center have had the honor of working with very closely. So, Pramila.
Thank you so much, Maria Elena, and good morning, everybody. I'm very pleased to be here because obviously the issues facing our dreamers across the country are critical. And, you know, a month ago when President Trump issued his edict stripping away DACA from 800,000 young people across this country, he was throwing the lives of those young people across the country into limbo. And when he then said that he wanted to work on a real solution, a legislative solution, there were people whose hearts perhaps were lifted up just a little bit, hoping that perhaps he meant this. But the most recent release of the White House immigration principles show that once again, Donald Trump is using dreamers as a political football, and that he has not proposed any real solutions that can be discussed or debated or negotiated. The reality is he promised Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer that we would bring the DREAM Act to the floor. And at this point, every single Democrat has signed the discharge petition to bring the DREAM Act to the floor. What we have asked for, and I believe that this is a bipartisan wish, what we have asked for is a clean DREAM Act, a DREAM Act that allows a path to citizenship for dreamers across this country, that takes the limbo away from millions of lives across this country, and that recognizes that dreamers contribute to, enrich, and enhance our country and our future. I want to just recognize in particular the impact that these cruel policies that have been proposed by the Trump administration, let me just say that I said yesterday at a press conference that this proposal from the White House is a love letter to white supremacists. I believe that this is once again just catering to a small and shrinking minority of Trump's base, and it is not a real policy solution or option. But the particular impact of this proposal, these proposals, would disproportionately burden women and families. I think that there's this perception that the administration and others have been trying to put out there, which is that the majority of immigrants are these scary, mostly men who are committing all kinds of crimes. It's just a false narrative. Two-thirds of all immigrants to the United States are women and children, and nearly 70% of all women immigrants who have legal status actually obtain that through the family immigration system, which is one of the things that the Trump administration, that the White House has put on the table as needing to change and proposing replacing it with a very faulty points system that would greatly harm our families and our country. We know that many women are stuck in visa backlogs, waiting years and even decades to be reunited with their families, and the merit-based proposals that currently exist just do not recognize the valuable contributions of women, especially as domestic workers and caregivers for American elders and children. On the DREAM Act, I believe that the faith community, business leaders, Republicans, and Democrats are looking to pass a DREAM Act that would, for once and for all, allow for stability for these incredible young people across the country. And just this morning in The Hill, I had an op-ed with Republican from Kansas, Roger Marshall. We talk about the DREAM Act in there, and we go on to talk about immigration reform. The reality is we both believe on both sides of the aisle that the rhetoric that is being put out there is not helpful, that what we really need to do is pass the DREAM Act and then move on to pass sensible and humane immigration reform. That is what we're pushing for. 82% of Americans support a path to citizenship for DREAMers, while only 10% back deportation. And the majority of the country does not believe that we need to do border security as part of the DREAM Act. They believe that we should just pass the DREAM Act. In fact, we have continued to pour money into the border, and we are at net zero migration on the border. So we need to get to real solutions. We need to back off these terrible proposals that are being put forward by the White House and do nothing to unify the country or honor the contributions of DREAMers and of immigrants to our country. Let me turn it back to you, Maria Elena. I'm going to go check. I might have to go do some votes, but I hope to stay on if there are questions from folks in the press. But I'll do my best.
Wonderful. Great. Thank you so much, Representative Jayapal, for your leadership on the Hill and helping us get through the finish line. Absolutely. We need you there. And thank you for your leadership. We're next going to go from Congress to the local level. As we all know, all politics is local, and so we're really excited to have Mayor Strickland from Tacoma, Washington, with us today to share her perspective about how this is playing out at the local level. Mayor Strickland?
Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you for letting me be part of this call. And I want to especially thank the two speakers who courageously shared their personal stories. We in local government need to use our voices and speak up about the importance of getting a clean DREAM Act. And this is incredibly important for many reasons. We know that this administration has taken a cruel, out of touch, and un-American approach to immigration. And the DREAM Act and protecting our DREAMers was probably supposed to be the easiest part of immigration reform. And it's turned into, as our Congresswoman said, a political football. We need a clean DREAM Act that does not have strings. And here at the local level, I just want to share some data points as well. In Washington State alone, nearly 18,000 people were initially approved, and nearly 16,000 have received approval for renewal. In the Tacoma-Seattle-Bellevue region, 5,400 people have applied for initial DACA status between 2012 and 2013. And in Tacoma alone, we have an organization called Tacoma Community House that helps our immigrant and refugee population. We've had hundreds of young people gain DACA status. The part that is really heartbreaking in all of this is that It puts families in jeopardy. Women and children have to live under uncertainty. And as you've heard from our previous speakers, they are people who contribute positively to our communities. And it really just demonstrates that the sweeping generalizations and the mischaracterizations of our undocumented immigrants just isn't true. We know that this nation is stronger because of our immigrant communities. We know that our immigrant communities are people who are people of faith. They value strong families. They're business owners. And yes, they pay taxes. And to be honest with you, our economy depends on our immigrant population. So today, more than anything else, I am calling on all of our local leaders across the entire country from both sides of the aisle to ask for a Clean Dream Act. We want this administration to stop being out of touch. But more than anything, we know that there are good people in Congress who understand the importance of a Clean Dream Act, and we're calling upon them today to please pass one so that all of our communities are stronger and more stable, and we respect people from all parts of the world. This country is built on immigrants, and that hasn't changed. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mayor Strickland, for sharing the local politics perspective and the importance of getting a Clean Dream Act. And our final speaker before we open it up for questions is last but not least a wonderful colleague, Professor Roberto Sudo, who is the director of the Tomas Rivera Policy Institute at the University of Southern California as well. Professor Sudo.
Thank you, Maria Elena. There's a growing body of research from many fields of social science which shows that the anxiety and insecurity associated with unauthorized status can be transmitted to children and have all kinds of negative effects. And that, as we heard with that very compelling story from Martha, legalization can reverse that situation and can bring extraordinary relief to these families and to those children. The tragedy of what the administration is proposing with the reversal of DACA is to bring back that insecurity and anxiety to those children who are primarily U.S. citizens. This highlights one of the great faults of the lack of legalization for the unauthorized population as a whole, which is to understand these adults as parents who are doing the work of our society by raising our future workers, our future citizens, our future voters, and the investment that we already have in those lives, and the need to provide the kind of security which allows those children to grow up in healthy households. The Dreamers, DACA recipients, are just part of this picture. When you look at the entire unauthorized population, there are nearly 5 million U.S. citizen children living in households in which one or more parents is in unauthorized status, and they are suffering as a result of these existing policies. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Professor Sudo, and for bringing the academic research to ground a lot of what we've just been talking about. So with that, we'll open it up for questions. Operator, if you could please give people the instructions on how to queue up. And we'll start answering those.
Of course. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone keypad. You may remove yourself from the question queue by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone keypad. And we can pause a moment to allow questions to queue. And we'll take our first question from Andrew Nicola with Arizona PBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. So my question is for Isela Blanc. So Mrs. Blanc, how do you feel the policy priorities that were like released by the White House Sunday affecting DACA families in Arizona?
I'm sorry, you were a little muffled. Can you repeat the question, please?
Sure. How do you see the policy priorities released by the White House on Sunday affecting DACA families in Arizona?
I was absolutely horrified.
I cannot describe in words how I felt. What I can tell you is that it is a departure of what I have always believed to be America. Everything that is highlighted in those demands, as stated earlier, is an agenda that is attacking all immigrants. And it's really almost a way of redefining what this White House wants America to be. And we have to start really asking tough questions. Is this an agenda to, you know, as they like to pretend, fix immigration, or is this an agenda to make America what they want it to be, which is more, more white, honestly. And the reality is that America's demographic is changing. It is becoming more diverse, and our diversity is our richness. And we are failing to acknowledge and recognize that. And because of that, this administration is attacking family, is breaking apart family, is creating fear, is hurting children, right? I had to go to a school a week ago where 95% of the children in this public school are Latino. Most of them are first generation. Many of them have mixed status families, but what they all have in common is fear. So we have children who are in fear of their parents. Will their mom or their dad be home when they arrive from school? Will it be safe for them to go to the grocery store? Will they be able to have access to some basic rights? We have to start asking ourselves, is that the America we want to live in? And are those demands appropriate? Absolutely not. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. And thank you for your question, Andrew. Operator, any other questions in the queue?
Yes, and as a reminder to ask a question, it is the star and one keys. Our next question comes from Aziz Hanifa with India Abroad. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, please. Is Congresswoman Jayapal still there?
Yes, I am, Aziz. Hi, how are you?
Very good. Good to hear your voice and wish you all the very best in all your endeavors. Congresswoman Jayapal, there are also almost conservatively about 10,000 South Asian American DACA children and adults. And have you been approached by any of them in terms of the fight you're waging? Because there doesn't seem to be sort of a critical mass in the Indian American community and the South Asian American community in terms of fighting for these fellow South Asian Americans, which is really unfortunate. And here you and Raja and a couple of the other Indian American lawmakers have been waging sort of a lonely fight when it comes to those South Asian American DACA students and others. What are you going to do in terms of those South Asian Americans also, who are also part of the 800,000 DACA dreamers?
Thank you for the question. I chair the Immigration Task Force of the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus, CAPAC, and Judy Chu, who is the chair of that caucus, and I have been convening calls with AAPI advocates across the country. I think we had over 100 groups on our first call to really try and lift up the issue of Asian Americans who are Asian dreamers, AAPI dreamers across the country who are affected, because I do think it's important for us to recognize that dreamers come from everywhere. They are in every single one of our communities, and certainly South Asians, as you mentioned, we have a significant number of South Asians. I know that SALT and a number of other groups have been lifting up the voices of individual South Asian dreamers, and so we have told those stories as well. I know that in Washington State, Satya Nadella, the chairman, CEO of Microsoft, said, if you want to get to the dreamers, you have to come through me. Some of those obviously are from AAPI and South Asian communities. And so I think it's incumbent on all of us, and Maria Elena knows that this is a something I've been passionate about for a long time. The issue of immigration is not about any one community. It really is about all of our communities, and we have to make sure that we're trying to lift up those stories. So Judy Chu and I have been really trying to make sure that in every congressional discussion about DACA and about Dreamers, that all of the minority caucuses are represented, the Black Caucus, the Asian Pacific American Caucus, and the Hispanic Caucus. Unfortunately, this issue of immigration is not an issue that any one community has has sole jurisdiction over. I don't know how to put it other than that. So I think it's important to have ethnic media lift up these stories. I know that this week is a national week of action for AAPI groups. In fact, I just went to an event that was held in Seattle on Monday with several hundred people in the AAPI community. The Sikh Coalition was present. A number of other, CARE was there, a number of other groups that represent South Asians were a part of that. So we've been continuing to do the work, but yes, it's not always easy. I think sometimes people, tend to focus just on one group, and really both in order to win this fight and in order to accurately represent the voices of all the communities that are affected, we need to make sure that we represent that diversity at every level. So we're doing what we can, and we'll continue to try to push the word out amongst South Asians to tell their stories, to lift up their experiences, and to organize our own communities to fight for everybody.
And I've got a quick follow-up, Congresswoman. Do you think your leadership of Senator Schumer and Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi were naive to think that President Trump was going to negotiate with them? Because here he was talking to them, saying that the border issue was not going to be a quid pro quo, and now he's done an almost a 360-degree about-face.
He has, and I can tell you that Leader Pelosi, for certain, I haven't talked to Chuck Schumer in the last week since it's happened, but certainly Leader Pelosi is very frustrated. But I would not say that they were naive. I think that they completely understood that this president is, extremely unreliable and irrational, and often does whatever his shrinking base tells him, even if he might think or his advisors might think that something else needs to be done. And so we are trying to, push to have the president keep that promise that he made to Pelosi and Schumer. And I think it's going to take all of us and Republicans. There are 30 Republicans who have signed on to Carlos Curbelo's, we call it Dream Act Light. It's not as good as the Dream Act, but they've signed on to that bill. They should be willing to sign the discharge petition to bring the Dream Act to the floor. And frankly, I've talked to a number of my Republican colleagues who are very close to doing that. They're not anxious to do it because obviously a discharge petition is usually a tool of the minority, but they do want to see this issue resolved. And they do understand that over 80% of Americans, Republican and Democrat, support allowing our dreamers to stay and be a part of our country for the future and not using them as a political football.
Thank you, Pramila.
Great. Thank you so much, Aziz. Aziz, this is Maria Elena from the National Immigration Law Center. Just wanted to add a couple of things to your questions. I think one, and really appreciate, and I'm glad that we had Representative Jayapal here to speak to the specific needs of the AAPI community, but wanted to echo one of the things that she said. I mean, first of all, the AAPI community is actually the fastest growing immigrant population, and particularly the undocumented population. And we do know that the number of AAPI individuals who are eligible for DACA, they did not apply in the same numbers. And so although the current numbers of DACA recipients
may be smaller than Latinos, for example, that does not mean that they're not impacted. The other thing to point out is currently we are fighting for a clean bipartisan DREAM Act that will actually benefit many more people than just that 800,000 DACA recipients, but other people who should be eligible for the DREAM Act as well. And obviously here in California, where we're headquartered, you know, one out of three individuals who are DACA recipients live in the state of California. And as you, I'm sure, know, at least California has, you know, this is a state where we have the largest number of API eligible members as well. The last thing I'll say is also this is true for the Black immigrant community as well. The numbers and the, you know, frankly, the media does not cover as much of the diversity of DACA recipients and young immigrants and the broader just even immigrant families as a whole. And so we absolutely want to make sure that we're continuing to lift up the breadth of who is impacted by President Trump's decision to terminate DACA, as well as the breadth of who will benefit from the passage and enactment of the DREAM Act. And then finally, I'll just, you know, on your second question, just say that we at the National Immigration Law Center, although we definitely denounce the quote-unquote principles that were issued earlier this week, frankly, we know that this president changes his mind multiple times a day, and his word isn't trustworthy, particularly when he is deciding to heed the advice of the white nationalists like Steve Miller and Jeff Sessions on his administration. But what we do know is that we have elected members of Congress like Representative Jayapal and many others, and we are holding both Democrats and Republicans accountable, and they are the ones who need to get the job done of getting the DREAM Act passed and getting a majority of the votes there. But really appreciate your question. Does anybody else, any of the other speakers want to respond to any of these questions so far? Okay, let's go to the next question, operator.
Yes, our next question comes from Sarah Bentecourt with Teen Vogue. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Sorry, you might be on mute.
And I do apologize, it appears she has removed herself.
Okay.
Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one keys on your touch-tone telephone keypad. And we have no further questions on the line at this time.
Great, thank you. Let me just check quickly on any of the speakers. Any final comments anyone wants to make? Okay, with that then, I thank each of our speakers. First and foremost, Martha Ruiz, and powerful comments for sharing your story, as well to Arizona State Representative Isela Blanc, also for sharing your story and your leadership at the state level. Mayor Marilyn Strickland from the city of Tacoma in Washington, similarly for sharing your experience on how the Tacoma, Washington community is experiencing DACA and what needs to be done by local leaders. Representative Pramila Jayapal, for your leadership both on the Hill and everything you are doing to help us get a clean DREAM Act, and to Professor Roberto Sudo from the University of Southern California for sharing what the research shows in terms of the impact on children, particularly U.S. citizen children whose parents are DACA recipients. Thank you to everyone for joining on today's call. Have a wonderful day.